in my ear. Election days are colder when pushing from the rear is fear, fearing fear, fearing fear.
Hello, this is Blaise Bonpain with World Focus, coming to you from KPFK Los Angeles. We're podcast and available 24/7 at kpfk.org, where we're heard internationally. I'm privileged today to have some very special guests. Haskell Wexler is the only cinematographer with a star on Hollywood Boulevard. He is probably the most famous cinematographer on the planet. He's winner of 4 Academy Awards, 2 documentaries, and 2 for dramatic films. The documentaries are The Living City, and Interviews with My Lai Veterans. The dramatic films are Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Bound for Glory. In addition to this amazing history, one of Haskell Wexler's film is a must-study for film students around the world. That, of course, is Medium Cool, which takes us to the Chicago Democratic Convention in 1968. John Cassellis, that's Robert Forster, is a television news cameraman who finds out that his station has been providing the stories and information gathered by the news journal to the FBI, and he's enraged. The TV station then invents a reason to fire him. Does that sound familiar? Yes, there were whistleblowers in 1968 as well. After the bloodshed of that Democratic convention, a congressional investigation concluded that the attack was a Chicago police riot based on massive evidence that the police moved with violence on a primarily legal demonstration. But, of course, my favorite film of Haskell Wexler is Latino, which he made about the mercenary war in Nicaragua funded by the Iran-Contra scandal. The use of mercenaries became so favored in the United States policy that we often find more mercenary contractors fighting our wars than members of the armed forces. And now Haskell Wexler has made a new documentary. This time it's about the great NATO meeting in Chicago in May of 2012. It is called 4 Days in Chicago. And friends, this is only the beginning. Joining Haskell today is his niece, Daryl Hannah. We might say that Daryl needs no introduction regarding her endless film credits, but I want to remind you of her many arrests as well. Daryl was arrested in front of the White House this year for protesting the XL pipeline. She was arrested various other times trying to stop that environmental disaster. She'd been a member of the famous Sea Shepherd crew as part of Operation Musashi. She was arrested with supporters of the Urban Farm in Los Angeles. She was arrested to protest mountaintop removal in southwestern West Virginia. She walked together with those on horse and bikes from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation to the Rosebud Reservation to oppose the Keystone Oil Pipeline. For me, this is a great occasion, and I'd like to welcome both Haskell Wexler and Daryl Hannah. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Blaise. And, you know, you said you liked my film, Latino. I would not have made that film without being with you in Nicaragua and understanding what was being done and not reported in the American press.
Well, thanks so much, because what you did was reflect the actual Contra war, what it was doing. It was hard to watch, but we were watching once again a truth teller telling the truth with art, yep, which is what Aristotle called the splendor of truth. Haskell, why did you go to Chicago last May? What did you have in mind?
Well, I had in mind that my name was in the Chicago newspapers. The mayor of Chicago said that this is not going to be 1968 when Occupy comes to object to NATO and all the austerity that our war making makes. And he said that this time the city will be protected from the invasion of these people And since they mentioned my name and they mentioned Medium Cool, I decided I better go home. And so I went home with a camera, with friends from California who were Chicagoans, who were filmmakers, Annie Davis and Mike Gray, and help from a lot of people, young people mostly in Chicago, who do cameras.
Well, that is wonderful. Now, Mike Gray did that great film about nuclear power, didn't he?
Yes, the China Syndrome.
China, exactly, my goodness.
Yes, and he's done a lot of great documentaries as well.
Now, I never saw so many police per people as in your documentary, 4 days in Chicago. They had an army out there.
Well, the city was under siege. They closed down streets. They put fear in the people that they were going to be invaded by some strange groups called occupiers. And even friends of the family who were very sensible, live in big apartment buildings, hired security guards to walk up and down in front of their buildings with guns on them just in case for the protection. So it really was a siege. And then, of course, when the occupiers came in, they had classes in nonviolence. It was big discussions of nonviolence and how to deal with any amongst them who don't live by that rule, how to isolate them and how to present their views. Even the anarchists, I heard some of them talking and saying, look, the police are not your enemy. They are just doing their job. And if you act violently, then they win. And I thought that was a very important part of what Occupy NATO message it had.
I think that Occupy did a great service by its structure of calling upon everyone to participate and its dedication to nonviolence. Now, some people were there. You were there with Melvin Ricky McLean, who was with United Electric. And we have a clip here of him speaking about the American dream.
Yeah, Melvin had a T-shirt on that said the words American dream. So in the film, I asked him, what about that? And I remember what he said, and I think you have a clip.
Yes, we do.
What does he say?
What do you want? I see your shirt says you have a dream. What is that dream?
I had a dream, but Bank of America stole it. I heard that Monday downtown. I seen a sign up in the air, and I thought that was really nice. But I'm just curious, though, you know, because that wasn't always the way things were done, correct?
Well, a lot of us bought in to the American dream. The American dream is to have a car, have a house, kids go to school, have a good job, be able to go to a ball game, have vacation time, and live a life.
Yeah.
And that should be a dream.
It really shouldn't. I mean, if I wanted to go skiing in the Alps, you know, that should be a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up, going to work in the morning, putting my kids through school, being able to drive to work, to come home and eat in my house, that should not be a dream. To go to the doctor when I'm sick, that should not be a dream. You know?
So you're asking what's screwed up? Is that what you're asking?
Exactly. What happened?
Haskell, the beautiful thing about that demonstration was the incredible joy that was in all of those people. You could hear it in them speaking. You could hear it in the sense of humor that they had and that they knew what NATO was about, this horrible international military force that has made a global presence of our military around the planet. So we're now a planetary military. But instead of bemoaning that, they celebrated the fact that they were opposing that.
That's particularly clear with the thousands of nurses that came from all over the country, and actually some from outside the country, who represented life, taking care of people's health, and the cuts that are happening of health care can offer people going toward the military and other non-life things, going toward death, the extremes. And how they dealt with is exactly right, because they celebrated themselves and what they stand for, and they know that most people would feel and believe the same way, but because of the media distortion or blackout, or things don't exist unless it's on commercial media. And the whole event in Chicago, which expressed what those nurses were talking about, were not heard anywhere else in the country.
You know, our theme song for this program is Fear, Fearing Fear, which was written by my son. And fear is the force that holds together corrupt governance. People afraid to think, afraid to speak. And the fact of people coming out now on the street, both in Chicago in 68 and also now, as never before, is a sign that the love of truth is there, and people crave truth, this sense that the truth will make you free. And we had there present David Swanson, who put this all together in a book called War is a Lie. And in that book, he states, and he demonstrates historically, wars are started by one set of lies, they're maintained by a second set of lies, and they're ended by a third set of lies. So maybe we could hear some words from David Swanson at this demonstration, 4 days in Chicago, May 2012, new documentary by Haskell Wexler.
Every time the U.S. drops a Hellfire missile on a family, on a compound, on a car, we are creating more enemies than we are killing. We have to speak up against the killing of so many innocent people. And since our media won't cover this issue, it's up to us to cover this issue.
You don't have to check out every war lie. You know in advance that a case made for war is made with lies. Right? Even if we don't get all the information until decades later, you know that the fundamental underlying questions have been framed dishonestly.
That was David Swanson.
You know, Blaze, yeah. It's interesting. He talks about knowing history, recent history. Everybody knows that we were lied, consciously lied into Iraq. Leaders of our country, they didn't just make a mistake or a misjudgment. They calculatedly insulted the American people with their lies, causing thousands and thousands of deaths and destroying an ancient city of Baghdad. And yet, our history does not record that, does not say that.
The sad thing, Haskell, is that after each of these horrendous conflicts, we hear that there was a tragic mistake. Well, I'm sorry, it wasn't a tragic mistake. It was done intentionally, and 3 million people did not survive in Indochina. And we lost that war. And in the wake of that war, we entered into a Central American war. 200,000 killed in Guatemala, your film documenting 40,000 killed in Nicaragua, 80,000 killed in El Salvador. And who is the government of El Salvador today? The FMLN. Who is the government of Nicaragua today? The FSLN. Apparently, we lost those conflicts as well. And then the disastrous attack on Panama, the Christmas attack of 1989, absolutely unacceptable to kidnap Mr. Noriega. And that led to almost immediately 88,000 tons of bombs being dropped on Baghdad in January of 1991. And that war has continued ever since 1991, through old Bush, through Clinton, into young Bush, and into today. The Iraqis are fighting each other because the Sunnis, who were in power, were overthrown by the Shias, who were out of power. Now the Shias are in power, and the Sunnis are calling them traitors, and that Sunni-Shia sectarian conflict is going on throughout the Arab world. We have not won anything, and maybe it's better that we didn't win anything, because it's not an achievement to destroy these countries.
Blaise, what you say depresses me. It doesn't depress me because of what you say is not the truth. It's how we are kept from the truth, and intimately kept from the truth. And that's why I think that those of us in the media, for example, I make films, Daryl puts her body on the line talking, that we have to try to figure out how to break the rewriting of history daily. Obama came in saying he was for change, but you can't have change unless you identify what you're changing from, and he never has. And until he has, we're doomed to more of what's been going on.
Well, it's so tragic that President Jimmy Carter just announced that we do not have a functional democracy. That's quite a statement coming from perhaps our greatest ex-president. He reminds me of John Quincy Adams, who, after he was president, went back into the Congress to denounce slavery. And Jimmy has been on the job. He hasn't spent the rest of his life playing golf. He's been out there internationally as a message spokesperson for peace. And he said, we do not have a functional democracy. I want to give a brief blurb here on your film. It says that Haskell Wexler takes a personal look at Chicago over 4 days in May in 2012. 4 days filled with politics, protest, and police. The Occupy movement, the National Nurses Union, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Code Pink, and other converged on Chicago to tell President Obama and Mayor Emanuel to stop the insane spending on wars around the world and bring the money home for housing, schools, and health care. Police were brought in from other states. The mayor, 1% Emanuel, spent $27 million to secure the city against the threat of citizens speaking out. It was a huge event in Chicago, but the national press wouldn't cover it. There was hardly anyone outside the city even knew that it was happening. All the American media fed the people were sensational images of a menacing black bloc. They suppressed stories of intelligent Americans exercising their constitutional right to protest. Emanuel's decision was to militarize the city. That's a blurb on your new film.
Blaise, early on you talked about fear and how fear controls us. The Chicago situation could not have happened if the factor of fear was not there. The mayor said, we are protecting our city. It's our city, and the outsiders who are what they stand for, who they are, go become an anonymous. And as long as you can have an anonymous threat to you, and you can have people in authority who say that that we will protect you from that fear, and we know who those other people are, and we know that they have bad intentions, so we can even deal with preemption of violence that they say they're opposing by destroying them either with drones or with heavy-duty militarized police when they raise their head in complaint. That's the thing. That's the only reason they can do it. That's the only reason they can scare people in the apartment buildings in Chicago to hire security people with guns, because the system says that it's something to be feared and will protect you.
Well, Eric Fromm was just totally preoccupied by the horrors of the Holocaust in the Third Reich. And he wrote the book Fear of Freedom. And he realized that fear can create such a paralysis that people stop thinking. And when someone comes in and takes them away, we're apt to be terrorized into saying, well, he wouldn't have been arrested if he wasn't guilty, you know, and start to defending the police state as if it were necessary. And we saw this, of course, in Chile and throughout the Americas. Brazil was under a military government. Argentina had a dirty war. And now these countries are giving us an example, and the most vicious situation of all was Guatemala, and now they have indicted a former president and convicted him of terrorism and convicted him of massacring the Ishil people. It's true that another court came in and put that on hold, but they were the first country in Latin America to indict a president in that fashion. And we have to do the same. We can't honor former criminals, former war criminals. We just can't do that, or we'll keep repeating this disaster. I'd like to share, talking about fear, my fear today is that we're deteriorating so fast and that the equivalent of a military coup has taken place, and that with the continuing ignorance and violence, we're going headlong into a nuclear conflict. And nothing's going to stop it unless we have a realignment of our people. That doesn't mean going from Democrat to Republican. That has nothing to do with it. A realignment means that people together rethinking how they're governed, rethinking and restructuring their government so that the military is not de facto in charge. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Well, our heart, obviously, and our treasure is in military spending, because that's what we do with most of it. We've got a $1.5 trillion job ready for one fighter plane, which probably better if it was never built. So we are freaking out, and we're going headlong into probably a nuclear war. And we have to draw the line and say we demand a realignment in the name of this planet, which is in grave danger. And somebody sitting next to you knows all about that. Hannah, why do you get arrested so often, Daryl?
Well, I don't want to.
Well, it's just, I'm so shocked, you know. I just thought that people like you didn't get arrested. But it was this year, you were in front of the White House, you were complaining about that pipeline. What's wrong with a pipeline?
Well, you know, I know it's interesting because I'm so learning so much just by sitting here listening to you both. And I remember, you know, in the early 80s going down to Central America to visit Haskell on the set of Latino and to go down and sort of do a fact-finding mission and learn about what was happening in that region during the Iran-Contra time right before the hearings. And that was an eye-opener for me. You know, I think that was, I had already started acting and learning that, you know, of course the things that I had said in my interviews about my movies and stuff weren't really reported accurately. So I knew that there was sort of a disconnect between, you know, reality and the media's reporting. But when I got to Nicaragua, for example, and I saw the blatant lies that were being reported in the you know, American newspapers, contrasted with what was actually happening on the ground in front of my very eyes, it really changed the world for me. It made me really realize that I couldn't I couldn't rely upon the mass media to inform me about the reality, and I had to start looking into things myself.
It was so important for you and so many other, literally hundreds of thousands went down to see the war, and mm-hmm. they came back and they talked in their churches and they wrote op-ed pieces and they did reports on the media. And I think that helped us to avoid seeing a terrible invasion, in spite of the fact we did see the Contra War, which took so many lives. It was just an unbearable situation. And then we got the CIA reports on the instructions to the Contras, which were to go after the liberation theologians, go after the progressive religious people, go after the social workers. They didn't say anything about fighting the military. Mm-hmm. They just told them to fight the people. And that was a terrible tragedy. And for all of us, it was unforgettable. And to realize if we air things that the president was saying, President Reagan declared a state of emergency because of Nicaragua, a country that had one elevator.
the moral equivalent of our founding fathers.
That's true.
Yeah. But you know, Bryce, you know what? Most people, if you hear us talking like that, they say, well, look, that's history. That's okay. That's history. And what we have to do is we have to see mm-hmm. how history is with us and how history is being denied and reshaped.
Yeah.
And, for example, when Daryl's out there complaining about what's being done to our environment, that's part of the movement that really is the essence of the whole thing. We're all on this planet together. We're all human beings. It's not this political philosophy or this military force or this race. And once you have racism or the otherism or the outsider, you can generate the fear. So that her work in talking about what avaricious business does to people, to life, is educative and called political, but actually is human. And that's why I'm glad that she happens to be here with us, because I'm so proud of her.
Well, we have reason to be proud, because we have a religion which is known as American exceptionalism, and we somehow are socialized to believe that what our country does is the will of Jesus. I just don't know what's going on here. But it's a terrible aberration in religion, as I see it, that if we have drones killing innocent people, we have signature drones killing people, we have no idea who they are, they just want to give them a message, and we're supposed to accept that? I'm sorry, we can't. We don't have to abide by a religion of state which tells us that the foreign policy of the United States is the will of God. It's just not.
We have Trevon Martin. He's the other.
Yeah.
He's the other. He's the subject of the drone. In other words, when they see a black man walking at 7 o'clock at night, underneath it is, you know, who the man who's following him in the car. You know that he is potentially not for any good. And so that is the same philosophy that's part of foreign policy as well. It is racism. The basis for a lot of warfare is racism, is categorically identifying the enemy and not going up who they are, what they are, and who you are, and what makes you the world's policeman.
Haskell, the foreign policy is becoming the domestic policy. We are so, it's such a tragedy that 25% of the prisoners of the world are in the United States of America. We have 4% of the world's people. This is unacceptable. And now those prisoners are on strike. They're on strike in communion with the prisoners in Guantanamo, who are on strike to the death. And we have people in Code Pink and other organizations fasting with them at this time. Mm-hmm. Some of them have really gotten me angry. I mean, my gosh, this dear woman that fasted 57 days. I remember one of the founders of Code Pink, I was writing to her and saying, for God's sake, eat something, you know, because I don't want you to get sick. So the point is that our foreign policy is coming home. We have 80,000 prisoners in solitary confinement, which has been defined as a form of torture, and that has to stop. So
I think that's this is all a reflection of, you know, the corporate takeover of the world. You know, I'm so thankful to programs like yours, to the radio, and to, you know, to aspects of citizen journalism on the internet for keeping me informed. But I have to say, you know, what's so upsetting, all these things that you're talking about are so depressing and upsetting, but I have to say that I have been really encouraged lately by the numbers of people who have finally reached their limit and are starting to show up out on the streets. I mean, even with, you know, you remember when Rodney King was beaten here in L.A., things, you know, lit on fire and the city, you know, burst into flames and it was an amazing expression of, you know, the frustration that had been pent up for so long. Well, with this, you know, Trayvon Martin verdict, every city in this country had people coming out, and not only the cities, even small towns, people came out on the streets and said, no, this is unacceptable. You can't just go gunning down people and get away with it. And I think that the uprisings in the prison, the uprisings in Turkey, the uprisings all over the world, people are in Brazil. I mean, I think that's what it's going to take. You know, as much as, like I say, I don't like going to prison, probably I'm going to have to go a few more times. And I think that we all are going to have to get out there and make ourselves be heard, lay our bodies down on the line, and draw a line in the sand and say, you know, this, you know, corporatocracy is not working for us. The military state is not working for us. You know, we've got to get back to, you know, supporting our life support systems and each other, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Daryl, because I find the same things. As I travel around, I expect people to disagree because I'm accustomed not to being agreed with, and I'm finding more and more acceptance of it. And I'm expecting them to be shocked or whatever, or to say that I'm not a good American. That's not happening now. It's something has changed.
Yeah.
And it's very, very...
Because we're all suffering. Everybody, really across the board, unless you are in that really tiny top 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are all struggling. And you know, that was so eloquently said, that gentleman who was talking about the dream. You know, a dream should be, you know, going to some exotic place and doing some magnificent thing, not going to, you know, take care of my health if I'm sick, you know, not feeding my children. I mean...
Yeah.
It was so beautifully said, and I think people are struggling and suffering on so many levels. And now it's just a matter of getting back to common sense and being able to take care of, you know, our basic needs. And with 7 billion people on the planet, that's, you know, a challenge. And those are the places that we need to focus our energy now, you know, and not being, you know, cavalier and wasteful, with our resources and our financial capital and all, you know, all these things.
So. Well, Haskell, you know, in regard to what Daryl was just saying, could you contrast the mentality in Chicago at the 4 days in May with the mentality of 1968? What differences do you see in the situation?
Well, you know, my film in 68 was called Medium Cool.
Yeah.
At that time, television was very new, and the anti-war demonstrators knew that they wouldn't exist unless television would cover it. And you know, in Medium Cool, you'll see a scene where police are taking cameras, still cameras, off of someone. There weren't a whole bunch of cameras around in those days. And once an NBC truck with the big video cameras that they was there, went through the crowd, and then left. And the demonstrators are saying, come back, because they wanted to be certified that they existed. Now, later, the media knows how to deal with life, the movie. They create the movie that the city is being invaded, Actually, schools were closed in Chicago. Streets were closed. Buildings were boarded up. And the fear thing was created by the media, helped by the mayor, of course. And incidentally, all Obama had to say is to Rahm Emanuel, it's a peaceful demonstration. Don't be rough. And you saw in the film the police. These were not regular Chicago police. I mean, I talked to the real cops, you know, they'll talk to me. But the guys came in full battle dress with bulletproof outfits on, and it was 100 degrees. And when they came in later on, they were there in force. And I was in the back. I just wanted to say one thing. I was in the back of group that was leaving a certain area because we were told we could leave on a certain street. I forgot the name of it. And everyone went down that street to leave peacefully. And about a block and a half down, the police were there stopping them. I didn't see that, but the regular cameras, the TV cameras of the stations, were stationed there on little platforms ready for the show that they were gone. And sure enough, there was some struggles. You can see the police with their big sticks beating on some people. No one knows who said what to who, but they got their show. And they had stuff that goes on TV.
Friends, I'd like you to know that I'm very privileged today to be speaking to Haskell Wexler, who's the only cinematographer with a star on Hollywood Boulevard. He's probably the world's most famous cinematographer, a winner of 4 Academy Awards. And we're just so very happy to have him here today. And we're talking about his most recent film, which is 4 Days in Chicago, which was taken during the horrendous NATO international meeting in Chicago in May of 2012. And we're also reflecting on the classic film, Medium Cool, which takes us to the Chicago Democratic Convention in 1968, where a news cameraman who finds out that his station has been providing the stories and information gathered by the news journalist to the FBI becomes enraged and is immediately fired by the TV station. And we're also so very, very fortunate to have with us Daryl Hannah, who has been in so many films.
Daryl, you know, listen, I know about you being arrested, but when you're down there, because you've been all over the world, really,
yeah.
When you talk to people, what do you hear? Who's on the other side? Because we have to learn how to talk to them, right?
I mean, and that's the thing. I don't really think that there is the other side so much. I actually think that most people just want a decent life. They want to just be able to feed themselves and have a happy life. There's only a small percentage of people that actually have, you know, really sinister intentions. But I mean, in terms of these, every specific case, you know, once again, it's just people who've been told that if, for example, they stop the practice of mountaintop removal, your town is going to be, you know, is going to go away, your job is going to go away. Well, guess what? Those towns and those jobs are going away because of mountaintop removal. And then they start experiencing that, and guess what? They come over and start protesting with the people who are trying to stop it. And that happens again and again because people are, we're the same, you know, we have the same DNA, we have the same blood running through our veins, and we need the same fresh water and all these things. And unfortunately, these systems that don't promote life, you know, wars and, you know, destructive mining practices and extreme energy extraction policies and all these things are not good for any of us.
You know,
there isn't another side.
The system of public relations and advertising was designed to get people to do what they don't want to do. In other words, to vote against their very interests. And
right.
That's what happens when Chris Hedges wrote his book about mountaintop removal and the other problems. The people around there were saying, you're taking away our jobs. And he was trying to get across to them, I'm not here to take away your job.
Yeah.
I'm here to save the lives of the children in trying to live in this rotten water and terrible air that has been created. And so, but PR is out there working directly against it. And that's what happens on Pacifica, our radio network here. Sometimes people will call in and say, why don't you give the other side? And I tell them, please turn on your news at 6 o'clock. That is the other side. That is the side of 1% that has the power. We are the 99%.
And the vested financial interest.
So we're giving you the other side.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear the other side of the other side, just listen to the commercial news. So that's the situation we're in. The response to your film. Medium cool. It just doesn't go away. It continues because of the combination of a dramatic film together with a documentary coverage of a disastrous police riot.
There's a thing with the Criterion release of the combination of Medium Cool and present-day Chicago, and one of the scenes are young people in front of a poster for Robert Kennedy running for president. The cameraman of the film asks, well, why were you voting for Kennedy? And the young girl says, well, because he has long hair. And one of the other boys on the left side said, well, I wished he'd look into the assassination and of his brother and Oswald and the CIA, and then that's the end of the cut. And I had Bobby Kennedy Jr. See that scene, and he made the comment that, which he has made elsewhere before, that indeed his father wanted to look into the assassination of JFK and the connections between Oswald and the CIA and other organizations, but he was told by Johnson and by J. Edgar Hoover, the exact words were, this would be very bad for the country, don't do it.
Well, think about that, Haskell.
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy was the last president to stand up against the military. The talk he gave at American U in June, just before he was assassinated, he expressed the fact that he was going to end the Cold War. He was going to stop the arms race. And prior to that, he had said, quote, I am going to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Well, he was eliminated, and I think every president since got the message. It reminds me of the presidents in Guatemala and other small dictatorships that are told by the military, this is what you do or you're out of here in a box.
And when he said he believed in peace, that was the speech you talked about at the university graduation.
Yeah.
He said, not a Pax Americana supported by the military, not a Pax Americana where we give up our rights and so forth to militarism.
Right.
And genuine peace. And you can be sure that and the connection between Martin Luther King, JFK, and Robert Kennedy, who also was taking an anti-war stand, has never been thoroughly investigated. The way the media dealt with who the assassins were and what it was all about is still up for grabs.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, with Dr. King, his final speech at Riverside Church, April 4th, 1967, he said, the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the earth is my own country. And that was the time. After that time, he lost the support of the president. He no longer could get the protection that he used to get. And there is a diplomatic threat that maybe you've heard around the world, and I've heard a few times, and it is, we don't think we can protect you. And he was in that situation, which is a threat. There's just no question about it. Now, we speak of the militarization of Chicago in May of 2012. We have a clip here talking about preparations for the NATO summit.
Remember that if you're out and about this weekend, many streets and highways will be closed. Beginning at midnight tonight, Lakeshore Drive from Balboa South to 3.
The city is empty yesterday. It was eerie. Yesterday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we were driving down State Street in Michigan. It was like no traffic. It was so bizarre.
At McCormick Place, site of next week's NATO summit, this nation's largest convention center is becoming its most impregnable stronghold. Nearby storefronts are boarded up as if for a hurricane, but this storm is man-made.
Security fences are being installed around McCormick Place as safety measures increase for the upcoming NATO summit.
Here we had singing nurses, we had Tom Morello, we had a lot of good music, a lot of fun, a lot of costumes, and militarized to the hilt. I guess you could smell that while you were there, Haskell, right?
And a lot afterwards, we saw the extent of provocateurs, of government agents amongst them, of all kinds of Secret Service-type ways of trying to disrupt and divert the peaceful demonstrators. And fortunately, a lot of it was uncovered by good lawyers who helped along bringing out the truth.
You know, Haskell, over the years, we've seen a lot of flags burned, and everybody in the peace movement, when the burner came in, would say, who was that anyway? It was a guy dressed up in a costume to look like a hippie, and he had a flag that was soaked in kerosene, and so many times we found out it was the local police doing a show for us.
Well, you know, Blaze, the big problem is the idea of patriotism.
Yeah.
When you can be stigmatized that you're not a patriot. Yeah. I think that we are patriots. It's those who are lying and deceiving us as patriots. In the film, we talk a lot with veterans who are Iraqi veterans who talked about it and talked how they were deceived, why they went in and served, why they did horrible things which they wished they hadn't done, and they threw their medals away. And I think that really is the moving way, and it does say that we have to consider ourselves, we know we're patriots, and those who are willing to give up everything good that America stands for to be defended from the invisible other are less than patriotic.
What we need, I believe, is humanity. And here we have James Foley speaking in Chicago at the NATO gathering about dehumanization. Now, he has disappeared into Syria. He is missing, isn't he, as a journalist?
Yes.
And listen, here maybe are some of the last words of James Foley.
Yes.
I'm interested in what you said about the other, the categorization of the other, because you see it in all conflicts and wars, and you're saying El Salvador is sitting here, and I saw it in Libya and Syria, and it's like both sides attempting to, you know, paint a group as the enemy, as the other, and what happens, the dehumanization process of that, and that's extremely dangerous, but I guess it has to happen. It happens that in a war so that they can kill each other.
Yes, hear the word dehumanization. I mean, that is a critical word in what can lead us to do horrible things.
So interesting that you said that, because since you guys started talking about that and how you have to keep the enemy sort of anonymous. Well, when I went out with Sea Shepherd, for example, the only way that they're allowed to put their program on the air is if the Japanese fleets remained anonymous. If they kind of just said the whalers, they couldn't actually name the companies and the sponsors of those Japanese whaling fleets. And the same thing made me think about the Occupy movement, which, you know, has been continuing to do incredible work, but maybe the unfortunate moniker of anonymous, which they've taken online, is maybe not all that helpful ultimately, because it does put people in this, you know, sort of category of being a nebulous thing that they could be painted as something to be feared rather than, look, I'm your mother, I'm your brother, I'm your son, I'm your neighbor. You know, to give people a face and a name and an identity within your community rather than an anonymous group is coming into Chicago to, you know, to threaten us all. It's just not true. These were your neighbors. These were your, you know, your sisters and your cousins and your, you know, your school teachers and your nurses, you know.
Names are so important. Mm-hmm. That's why the Vietnam Monument is so important. These are people, you know, that have died. And with the demonstrations at the School of the Americas that Haskell knows a great deal about, he visited their leader in prison, Father Roy Bourgeois. They go for the names of every child, of every person whose life has been taken because of the School of the Americas. Yeah, we're people. We're not an anonymous force. I so agree with that, because once we understand that these are human beings, then we can say, you know, we're better than that. And I could see, rather than sending millions of troops to Iraq and to Afghanistan, that if we had sent 100 diplomats saying, you know, we'd like to spend 6 months with you, we'd like to eat your food, we'd like to meet your people, and we'd like to also talk about our future relations, that would accomplish more than over 20 years of massacre has accomplished, and the torture that's gone with us. All of the experts agree that you get much more out of a, quote, suspect by having tea together than by torture. Torture is simply one other force of terrorism. It's all it has ever been. When it was in the church with the Inquisition, it was terrorism. It was terrorism in all of the police states we've seen. It accomplishes nothing. It has never gotten the truth out of anybody. Mm-hmm. So we're on a very desperate course. It's not as though it's just one glitch. It's since the end of World War II, we have been at war, you know. From Korea to Vietnam to Central America, Panama, over to the Middle East, and now
we're in Central right now.
Yeah, we're challenging China with the new economic program, which is in direct conflict with China. Instead of sitting down and say, folks, we're both big, all right, let's have some fun together and let's spend some time and let's decide how we can work this out. But, you know, time is fading here. Daryl, you may have some last comments you'd like to make. We're so happy to have Daryl Hanna with us today.
Yes.
Well, I just would love to just sit here for hours and hours listening to you guys talk, because I'm learning a lot. But thank you so much for letting me
Daryl, say something about what you learn when you're out there, what you're doing, you know? Well, I mean, why do some people say it's okay to run these pipes and so forth?
It's all based on information. I mean, it's just, I just find that, you know, like I said, if you're coming from a common sense point of view, you don't find resistance and you don't find enemies and you don't find those walls. And it's that when you do find them, it's usually coming from someone not having access to information.
Thank you so much, Daryl Hanna and Haskell Wexler, for being with us today on World Focus. The music for this program was written and sung by my son, Blaise Martin. I want to thank my engineers, Dan Mizrahi. World Focus is produced by the Office of the Americas. You can download World Focus at officeoftheamericas.org, and we're now offering text copies of these programs, printed copies, with the fond hope that we may all be agents of justice and peace, peace on earth, and goodwill to everyone. Thanks for listening. Please stay tuned for Ian Masters and Background Briefing. This is Blaise Bonpain.
There's a siren screaming in my ear. Election days are colder when the pushing from the rear is fear, fearing, fear, fearing.